Welcome to the Profitable Steward Podcast with Jared Sorensen. In this series, we'll learn and explore regenerative agriculture principles. Through practices that improve soil health, animal health, and good stewardship, we are working to help you increase your productivity and profitability. Join us in learning from successful farm and ranch experts who share stories of growth from their fields to help your fields grow strong. Here is your host, Jared Sorensen.
Father, we thank you for the opportunity to learn. I pray that you'd open our minds to receive wisdom, the wisdom that we need to be good stewards of the piece of your creation that you've entrusted into our care. I pray that before we attempt to learn anything from anybody, that we would first ask that you would make us receptive to the pieces that are relevant to us, and that the pieces that aren't relevant would just sort of move on past us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Man, thank you, Todd Churchill, for that invocation, that prayer. We sincerely appreciate that. And we want to welcome Keith from Green Cover Seed. He is gracious enough to be here with us today. Keith Burns is someone that I've communicated with multiple times over the phone as we've been putting together cover crop mixes, and he shipped cover crop mixes out to us in Nevada. I have no doubt that the seed is viable. Sometimes the farmer lacks the skill to be able to get things to grow, and I think that's the issue that I have sometimes. And so I want to learn here as much as anybody. One of my questions going into this is how to be able to incorporate cover crop seeds into perennial pastures, low production perennial pastures, or places maybe where there's annual encroachment and things, especially in irrigated. But we want to keep this somewhat interactive. As I mentioned, we'll take your questions at the end. If you have questions that you want me to interject, type them into the chat. And we pray that the integrity of this recording works. This is being repurposed. This is the Profitable Regeneration Masterclass or webinar series, and it comes out also on podcasts, on different podcast channels. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, check it out. We try to have really good quality people come and speak to us, not just in the from the regen ag world, but sometimes from business in general and relationships, because those are the key things in our stewardship. So Keith, sometimes I ask people, you know, what's something about you that may not be in your, that got get into your bio, but what's something about you that is unique, I guess, is the way to put it. Anything you want to share there as we kick that off, Keith?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, when people ask me that, what I tell them is that I've had children in four different decades with the same wife. So wow. Our first child was born in 1989. And we've had seven children, and the last one was born in 2011. So not too many people can say they've had children in four different decades with the same wife. So that, I don't know if that makes us unique. Most people think it makes us pretty crazy, but it's been a lot of fun.
Hey, I'm right there with you. I don't think we span four decades. We're only at three. And I think our childbearing days are done, so you probably got us beat, but we've got nine and you've got seven. It's not a competition, and yeah, they're all a blessing, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, and it is a blessing, and as I go through, my talk, I'm going to talk a little bit about our business and kind of why we started it, but part of the reason was to give an opportunity for some of the kids to come back to the operation if they wanted to. And we felt like developing this business venture was less risky, actually, than, you know, trying to find another 2, 3, 4, 5,000 acres to farm and expand the farming operation. So I'll get into that a little bit here. But, it really is a family operation. We've got a lot of both my kids and my brother's kids are involved in it.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. And it's neat. It's good to support a good family operation. So if you don't know who Keith is, it's in my mind the premier cover crop business in the nation. He's got a very, very robust website, which helps you to be able to dial in a cover crop specific for your needs. your unique circumstances. And I remember Gabe Brown saying once, if you go to a cover crop salesman and they don't ask you some specific questions first about what your objectives are, what your soil's like, whether, you know, you're striving to build soil, increase your forage chain, extend that growing season, he said, probably just keep looking. Right. And so that's what I appreciate about Green Cover is, you know, they ask those questions. They're willing to take the time to make sure that they're meeting your goals and your objectives. So with that, Keith, jump right in. And again, on if you're listening to the recording, the slides will be on the YouTube channel, The Profitable Steward, The Profitable Ag Steward, I think it is on YouTube. So if you search for that, you'll be able to see the slides and get the whole picture. But we'll jump right in.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Jared. It's a pleasure to be here this evening with folks, and whatever time, if you're watching this recording, it's a pleasure to be with you as well. I'd like to start with this slide. You know, our little slogan, you know, we go through slogans at different times, but we make cover crops simple. We like that because it is a fairly simple thing. Now, there's a lot of complexity that can go with it. But we like to tell people that we can help you work through all that. So I want to just take you on a little bit of a history of our company and then get into some of the core things that guide us. And hopefully we'll have some time at the end for some good questions here. So we are located here in South Central Nebraska. You can see the little pin there on the map, almost exactly right in the middle of the continental United States. The geographic center of the U.S. is just 40 miles south of us. We have a farm there, Providence Farms. We farm a couple thousand acres here in Nebraska. And we do all this, like I was saying, as a family. It's my brother and I that started the farm and the businesses. And we have a lot of family members involved as well. And so we started Green Cover Seed in 2009. We did a little SARA grant. That's a whole nother talk about how that all came about. But we had a little grant, you know, we got like $5,000 to help do some moisture sensing in cover crops because we had to ensure ourselves that these were not going to hurt our operation. And some of the, what we learned from that, really encouraged us. We saw how well the cattle did on grazing the cover crops, and it really encouraged us to get this business started. So we started in 2009. We covered enough, we sent enough seed out the door to cover about 1,000 acres. 2010, we did our first mixing. 2011 was the first buildings. And this picture that you see here, in 2011, that was all farm ground. And then we started building. And it feels like we've been building and pouring concrete and putting up buildings, grain bins ever since. 2017, we were up to about 6,000 customers. And I skipped a lot of history there. But kind of fast forward to last year, this year, you know, well over 30,000 customers, shipping out 35 million pounds of seed a year, covering over 1 million acres. And we've really expanded into the food plot industry as well, which again is interesting because we are able to take that same regenerative message to these food plotters and have a whole new customer base that we can, if you will, preach the regenerative message to. So we started with family members. We added others in as we grew, and we've got about 55 full-time employees now. And for any of you that have employees, you know that that can be one of the more challenging parts of the business. And so we really had to work hard to establish shared values to drive the culture of our company. And that was so important. And I would really encourage you, and I don't care if it's just you and your family, or maybe you've got a hired man or two, or maybe you've got, you know, 100 different people. You must have shared values. You have to really be purposeful and intentional about driving the culture. Because as we like to say, when you do not have character in the culture, then you will have characters driving your culture. And you just can't afford to have that. So part of what drives us, or what largely drives us, is our core values. And at Green Cover, our core values are these five things. We strive to do the right thing. We strive to treat people right. We really emphasize that family matters. We emphasize teamwork, and we always want to be growing, whether that's a plant in the soil, always growing to build the soil, or each one of our people, both our employees as well as our customers, we always want to see them growing as well. And that could be spiritually. It could be growing in the knowledge of their profession. But it's important for us to always be growing. So our mission at Green Cover is to help people regenerate, steward, and share God's creation for future generations. And we do this through education, demonstration, and diverse cover crop seed mixes. As Jared was talking about, we've worked with him on mixes. We work with people in all 50 states, in most of Canada. And we really like to preach the message of diversity. And I'll get into that as we jump into the talk. But that's our mission. That's what gets us out of bed every morning. That's what drives us. That's what we hire around. That's what we encourage people to move on if they're not on board with our values and with our mission. They're just not going to be a good fit for what we're trying to do. And so we encourage them to seek other opportunities. And so we do all this because we're trying to solve this problem. So I'm going to kind of jump into, you know, that was kind of just a real quick history and philosophy around who Green Cover is. But this is what we're really trying to do. We're trying to solve this problem, whether it be, you know, Hugh Hammond Bennett standing there in that eroded field and with that dejected look on his face with that soil erosion, or the bottom picture showing how the Iowa, the average topsoil in Iowa has went from 14 inches in 1850 to 5.5 inches in the year 2000. They've lost 2/3 of their topsoil in Iowa. Or the picture in the upper left, even the soil that we have left is not nearly as good as it used to be. The soil on the left and the soil on the right are right across the fence line from each other. But one has been farmed regeneratively, the one that's nice and dark and black, and the other has been farmed conventionally. And the difference is in how much carbon is in that soil. So for we've lost much of our topsoil, and what's left, we've lost so much of the organic matter. We have to rebuild that. We have to do better. We have to solve this problem. And so as we do this, we like to apply what I call the 6 fundamental truths of biograce. Now, if you've never heard of this term, don't worry about it, because it's a term that I've largely made up, although the concepts aren't made up, but the term is. And I like to call this biograce. Bio, of course, meaning biology, and then grace being, you know, grace from God. And I like to think of it in this term, Joe, you know, true grace. If you think about true grace, it's free because you can't buy grace. It's undeserved. You can't earn grace. And it's unlimited. You don't run out. And the grace that I get doesn't take away from the share that Jared can get. It's not something that we have to share. It's unlimited. And of course, you know, the best example of true grace is God sending his son, Jesus Christ, you know, to die in our place and save us from our sins. That's free. You can't buy that. And we don't deserve it. We can't do anything to earn that. And it's unlimited. You know, the grace that God gives me does not take away from the grace that's available to anybody else. So that's what true grace is. And I want to talk about these biological things in the context of grace, because these are things that have been given to us by God. They're free, they're undeserved, and they're unlimited. And when we apply them, we can fundamentally change what we do. So here's the 6 fundamental truths of biograce. I'm going to go through these fairly quickly because, again, I want to save time at the end for questions. And these are fairly basic principles. There's going to be nothing new here, but hopefully there's a little bit of a new way that we can look at these things and how we can apply them on our own operation. So number one, solar energy is limitless and it's free, and plants are the best way to capture, store, and convert it to something of value. You know, sunlight is free. Sunlight is given to us by God, by grace. It's free, it's undeserved, and it's unlimited. The sunshine that I get does not take away from the sunshine my neighbor gets. I didn't do anything to deserve when the sun shines, and I certainly can't purchase it. And so it's perfectly given by grace, and our whole agriculture system is basically listed right here. CO2 plus H2O with chlorophyll and the energy of that sun, we convert that into glucose, C6H12O6 plus oxygen. That's photosynthesis at its simplest, and it's what drives the whole system. And so as farmers, as ranchers, we're really not producing corn or soybeans or cattle. We're really just producing glucose at its simplest level by capturing the sun's energy. And then we convert that into other products that we can sell. We don't sell glucose. We're selling corn, or we're selling cattle or hay or whatever it is. But that's where it starts. And it's all based on solar energy. And so if I'm growing corn and soybeans, and I use this because I've done this talk, you know, in largely a row crop situation, you know, for those of you that have a lot of perennials, this is going to be a little different. But in a row cropping situation, when I'm doing corn and beans, folks, I'm only capturing about 50% of the solar energy that comes. That means the other 50% of that free given by grace sunlight is wasted. And so what we have to do is we have to get that cover crop in there. We have to get a forage crop in there. We have to diversify. We have to lengthen our rotations in order to capture as much of that solar energy as possible. And then ideally, you know, that cover crop could be processed through cattle, through animals, and converted to things of more value. And so that's really what we have to be looking at. And again, if you're a wheat farmer, it's the same thing. You know, we harvest wheat, and then a lot of times it's fallowed for 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, sometimes 18 months before anything else is growing out there. And it's a huge waste of solar energy. And so what we need to do is we need to come in whenever we can. It's not always possible, depending on where you're at, but whenever it's can, whenever it's possible and practical, we want to come in with a cover crop to grow, to capture that solar energy, to turn that into glucose, to turn that glucose into soil root exudates and let that feed the biology. And that really drives the system and lets it take off. So solar energy given by grace. Can't buy it, don't deserve it, and I'm not going to run out of it. We have to take advantage of that. Number two is carbon. Carbon is not a problem. You know, if you listen to the news, you would think carbon is the worst bane of mankind that has ever been unleashed on us, on society. And it's not. Carbon is not a problem. It is free food for both plants and biology. And so I get really sick and tired of hearing about carbon being the problem. Carbon's not the problem. Now, there may be too much carbon in the atmosphere and not enough in the soil. I don't know about the first one, but I know for the second one, that is completely true. So regardless of what the problem is, in my opinion, and I don't argue global warming with people, I just tell them I'm not smart enough to understand that, but I tell them regardless of what you think the problem is, the solution is the same. That's to get the carbon back in the soil where it belongs. So what we have to do, again, it's photosynthesis, CO2 out of the atmosphere. Our plants are going to pull that out of the atmosphere, put it into the plant material, but much of it is going to be leaked out into the soil system. As you can see here, this is how it works. These plants are, through photosynthesis, taking carbon dioxide, turning it into that glucose sugar, that carbohydrate, and they're leaking as much as 40 to 50% of it out into the root system. The biology is eating it. It's consuming it. It's they're using it to increase their populations. And in exchange, they have to give services back to the plants. They have to help source nutrients, deliver nutrients, protect the plant. Because if they're not doing their job in helping that plant in some way, that plant figures it out. God has designed enough intelligence, if you will, and intelligence maybe is not the right word, but God has designed plants in such a way that if they're not getting a return on their carbon root exudate investment, they're going to stop. They're going to stop putting that carbon out into the soil. So if there's no biology in the soil, that plant does not put nearly as much carbon into the soil. So the poor soils get poorer and the good soils get better, because the soils with lots of biology, that plant will crank up its photosynthetic rate and will put more carbon into the soil when there's more biology. And so it's a great circle. Circle of life, carbon circle of life, if you will, when you have that. Now, I don't have to pay for carbon. It's in the atmosphere. It's free. In fact, I may get paid to take it out if I want to join one of those programs. It is not deserved. I don't do anything to earn that carbon. It's there. You know, God has put that as part of the carbon cycle for me to take, and it's unlimited. I'm not going to run out because, again, carbon is a cycle. And it cycles through from the atmosphere to the plants, the soil to the biology. Again, it's a big, beautiful cycle. Here's a picture. Some of you know Jimmy Emmons, a farmer from Oklahoma. He took this picture. Love this picture. It's a very unique picture. This is a picture of a cereal rye cover crop root, and it's magnified. Now, he took this with his iPhone. He's got a little ProScope attachment that goes over the camera part of it. And this is a cereal rye root, and you can see the root hairs coming off laterally off the sides. But what I want you to notice what's very unique about this picture, look at all those liquid droplets, all those little liquid droplets. That is the liquid carbon that's being produced through photosynthesis. It's being pumped out through the root system into the soil to feed the biology, to communicate with the biology, to support their populations. Now, the reason this picture is so unique is that if you were to pull that cereal rye root out of the ground, all those little root hairs fall off because they're very fragile. And if you were to very gently wash all of the soil off, you can preserve those root hairs. But in the process of doing that, all those little liquid droplets go away as well. So he took this picture because this cereal rye root was not actually growing in the soil. It's growing sideways through a worm channel. You can kind of see the soil around it. He dug it up. He broke it apart, and this was exposed in the void of a worm channel, and he saw all these little liquid carbon droplets, and he thought, this is cool. This is what it's all about, and that's exactly what's happening. So think about the math involved here. So this is, you know, the diameter of a worm channel, you know, a 16th of an inch maybe, an 1/8 of an inch, and look at how many, you know, there's hundreds of little liquid carbon droplets in a 16th of an inch of a cereal rye root, and anybody that's ever grown cereal rye know how extensive the root system is on that plant. You know, we might plant 1 million plants of that per acre. So think of the billions and billions and billions of liquid carbon droplets going into Jimmy's field on every acre every day that this cover crop is growing. And here's the other thing. This cover crop, this is not 5 foot tall cereal rye. This is probably 10 to 12 inches. It was actively growing. So it was pumping out that carbon, but it was not a huge, huge plant. It was vegetatively growing. That's the power of cover crops. That's the power of taking that carbon that's given to us by grace. It's free, undeserved, and unlimited, and putting it into action. Number three, nitrogen is free and abundant. Nitrogen is free. Nitrogen is given by grace. You know, we don't have to pay for it. It's not something that we deserve, and it's not something that we're going to run out of. Now, you may be saying, now, wait a minute, I just wrote a check for my fertilizer, and nitrogen certainly is not free. Well, let me explain. So here's a pie chart of our atmosphere, and I don't know how well you can see this on your screen, but there's a tiny little pink sliver at the very top of the pie chart. That's carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is about 0.04% of our atmosphere. So it's really almost nothing. 0.04% of the atmosphere is carbon dioxide, and we don't pay anything for that, and yet we can grow all these big crops by pulling that carbon out of the atmosphere. Now, the big blue piece of the pie, 78% of our atmosphere is nitrogen. So is it abundant? It absolutely is abundant. Is it free? Well, above every acre of crop ground, above every acre of rangeland that any of you work on or are associated with, there are 30,000 tons of nitrogen. 30,000 tons. And that's there for the taking, because nobody is in control of that. It's part of the atmosphere. So it is free and it is abundant, but it's not available. And here's why. Because that nitrogen in the atmosphere is held as dinitrogen. There's two nitrogen molecules. They're bonded together with three sets of covalent bonds. It's very strong. They're attracted to each other and nothing else. So it's literally an inert gas in the atmosphere. That's why I can breathe it in. It does nothing to me. I breathe it right back out. It does not interact with anything inside me whatsoever. And you know, if you've had a whiff of anhydrous or of ammonia, you know how toxic nitrogen can be and when it's not in the dinitrogen form. And so the good news is we're not dead by breathing activated nitrogen. The bad news is we have all this nitrogen above every acre of crop ground and we can't get to it. And plants are the same way. Plants will bring that nitrogen into their system when they're taking in the atmosphere to strip off the carbon. They can do absolutely nothing with it. They have to breathe it or exhaust it right back out. So what we have to do is we have to break that dinitrogen bond, and that takes a lot of energy. It's very expensive, and we have to combine it with hydrogen and oxygen, and we can make it into forms of nitrogen that the plant can use, and that's where we get our nitrogen fertilizers, our commercial fertilizers, and the money that you're spending on that, you're not buying the nitrogen. You have 30,000 tons of nitrogen. You're buying the energy that it takes to put it into the form that the plant can use. And so, you know, as humans, we figured out how to build these big factories that was originally used to make bombs in World War I and World War II. And when the wars were over, they converted these into just making fertilizer. And so these fertilizer plants are essentially doing the same thing that they were doing when they were making bombs. But here's the cool thing. What takes man billions of dollars in these big fancy factories to do, God has given us the organisms to do the exact same thing, and they're free, and you don't have to do anything to deserve them. So rhizobia bacteria, you're familiar with those. If you've grown any legumes, those are bacteria that can break that dinitrogen bond. They use the right chemicals and enzymes, and they can break that bond. They combine it with hydrogen and oxygen. They make it into a form of nitrogen that the plants can use. And in exchange, and that's really cool, rhizobia can break that nitrogen bond, but they can't eat nitrogen. They can't survive on nitrogen. Their food source is carbon. And so they're only going to do that if the plant is willing to give them the carbon that they need to live in exchange for the nitrogen that the plant needs to grow. So that's super cool, and that's great news for legumes, but what about the non-legume species? Well, you know, as we're learning, as the scientists discover more, they get better microscopes, they're discovering new species every day, literally every day, of free-living nitrogen fixers. So organisms in the soil that do the same thing rhizobia do, but maybe at a smaller scale, but they're making nitrogen available for non-legume plants. And so if you have a non-legume plant, you know, have grass crop, there are things out there like Zotobacter and Azospirillum, and there's the list is growing, that can break this nitrogen, atmospheric nitrogen down, and make it available to the plants in exchange for the carbon root exudates that that plant is putting out. So again, we could go into a lot more detail on that, but God has given us the ability to take the nitrogen that he puts in the atmosphere for free and use it for our plants. All right, number four. So solar energy, carbon, nitrogen, all free, all undeserved, all unlimited. Number four, our soils are rich in minerals and plant nutrients. Okay, you may send a soil test in and they're going to look at it. They're going to read it and they're going to say, oh, hey, Jared, you only have 4 parts per million of phosphorus. You need to go out and put on 30 pounds of phosphorus per acre. Well, what they're, and I'm not saying that's not true or not right. What they're measuring, though, is just the phosphorus that a plant could extract from the soil, which is not very much because the phosphorus in the soil, you have a lot of phosphorus in your soil that plants simply can't get to. God did not create plants to pull nitrogen directly out of the atmosphere. He did not create plants to pull minerals directly out of the soil. It all goes through the biology. It's part of the created system. It's part of the way things were designed to work. And so in a system where you have very little biology, which would describe most of our farming systems, you know, if we have done a lot of tillage, if we're putting on a lot of synthetic nutrients, if we have a very narrow rotation, if we're overgrazing, if we're doing a lot of these things, we don't have much biology in the soil. We aren't going to get these minerals and plant nutrients to cycle out. And so then our soil test says you have to add these things. So here's what it looks like. This is mycorrhiza, and I'll show you another picture of it here in just a second. But this is a little tiny piece of feldspar. This is from an article in Scientific America. This is a little tiny, just think of it as a little grain of sand, highly magnified. And you see these little brown channels that have been cut up into this piece of feldspar, highly magnified. Those are literally mine shafts or mine tunnels because the mycorrhiza hyphae has produced the right chemicals and cultivated the right bacteria that it can literally dissolve solid rock, solid mineral. It liquefies it. It brings that liquid mineral back to its host plant. And here's what that looks like. Here's the mycorrhiza right here. These little hyphae are what's going in and doing that mining, but it's bringing that liquid mineral right back to the root of this plant. And in exchange, the plant gives it carbon. Because again, mycorrhiza, super cool organism. It can do great things, liquefy solid mineral and deliver it to the plant, but it can't eat those minerals. It has to have carbon. And so again, it's a beautiful system that God designed in order for these plants to live in harmony with the biology to access both the nitrogen as well as all of these minerals in your soil. And so if you would do a total mineral analysis of your soil, you will be shocked at how many minerals are in there, how many nutrients are locked up in your soil in that inorganic mineral form that plants will never be able to get to on their own. You'll have slowly, you'll have a little bit of release from a weathering process, but you'll quickly have some release on that with the biology. Now, it's a very complicated system. The plant communicates to the biology of what it needs and how much and when, so there's not an overproduction or an over-release to where you're going to be burning up your supply and it's going to be getting wasted. The plant is very efficient and it communicates what it needs to the biology, and the biology goes and gets it. So the picture on the right here is simply a plant that is highly colonized with mycorrhiza. You can see the big roots. There's like three big roots on this plant. And without the mycorrhiza, this plant could only pull nutrients from where those roots are touching. But with the mycorrhiza, it is putting its hyphal network out into the soil, and now it can access both minerals as well. And this is very important if you're in a dry area, as many of you are. That hyphal network can bring water into this plant as well as minerals. And so it's an extension of the plant's root system. It's a beautiful symbiotic relationship when you have that mycorrhiza fungi working in harmony with the plant. And so, you know, number five is a little bit of a summary of the first ones, particularly the nitrogen and the minerals here, because soil biology makes the system bigger, faster, stronger, and more efficient. And again, thinking about grace, you know, we don't do anything to deserve this biology, and really, you don't even have to buy it. It's in your soils. Now, if you beat up your soils with years of abuse, there's not going to be a lot out there, but there is some. And so if you build the right environment, they will rebuild their populations and they will come back. Now, there may be times when it's worth inoculating the soil, maybe bringing in a good compost or manure or something like that to help the system. But for the most part, our soils have this biology in it. And when we create the right environment, the biological populations will increase. They'll explode very, very quickly. And when we have that biology out there, it makes everything work better because it's the way it was created to work. And so we're not going to get the free nitrogen. We're not going to get the minerals out of our soil. We're not going to have all this cycling in availability. And even again, I could do a whole presentation just on disease suppression from this biology. You're not going to get that if you don't have the biology, and you can't have the biology if you don't have the plants out there producing the carbon to feed the system. And then number six, the sixth fundamental truth of biograce is that water is essential for all life and processes. Again, water is one of the two ingredients in photosynthesis, CO2 plus H2O. Okay, we can't forget that. This process does not work without water. And again, I'm talking to people from some arid areas, so this is nothing new to you. Now, you may be saying, though, Keith, I don't think water is unlimited. Now, true, we don't deserve it. You know, it rains on the just and the unjust, and, you know, you can't really buy the rainfall. You can buy irrigation water, but I'm talking about rainfall here. And I would agree with you, it's not necessarily unlimited, but here's what I want to propose to you. Oftentimes we don't take advantage of what the good Lord sends us. And we have complete control over what we do get. So this is this is actually one of our customers in Oklahoma. He grows seed for us. He plants cover crops. He farms on the left-hand side of this road. So this farm over here, regenerative cover crops, good rotation, livestock integration, same soil type on the right-hand side of the road, same slope, same soil, same everything. The only thing different is management practices. They got a big rain. They got 5.3 inches of rain in about an hour. Okay. And then he took this picture and he sent it around, and we've all been sharing it because it's such a great illustration of the water cycle and how we can control the infiltration. So this guy over here, his infiltration rate, 6 inches an hour. So a 5.3 inch rain in an hour, no problem. He soaked it all up. He got 144,000 gallons of water per acre stored from that 5.3 inch rainfall event. This guy over here, conventional tillage, just growing small grains, no cover crops, no grazing. His infiltration rate was 0.6 inches an hour, which is not uncommon for Oklahoma, or for that matter, it's not that uncommon for any place that has a lot of tillage involved in the system and not very much vegetative matter growing if you don't have a living plant. So he stored 16,500 gallons of water. So which one of these guys has, and I'll put it in quotation marks, unlimited rain? Well, neither of them is unlimited, but certainly Russ over here on the left was able to soak that up and take an advantage of all that he got. And so, again, that may not be a completely satisfactory description of why I say water is given to us by grace. But, you know, there's some really good information out there about how a diverse system uses and utilizes water so much more efficiently than a system of monocultures. And again, we just simply don't have time to go into that. If you have some questions about that, be happy to answer those. So those are the six truths of biological grace. But here's what's really important. Grace must be grasped and accepted, okay? God sent his son Jesus to die for our sins, but unless you reach out and accept that, that does you no good. God has sent us the sunlight and the carbon and the nitrogen and the minerals and the biology and the water, but unless we do something to grasp and integrate and implement those graces into our operations, it does us no good. And so basically the way that we integrate these graces, these things that are free and undeserved and unlimited into our operations, it's through the principles of soil health. And again, these aren't going to be shocking or new to anybody, but think about it now in terms of these free things that are out there for the taking, for the grasping, for the implementing. Because when we keep the soil covered, now we can take advantage of that rainfall. Because now I'm going to significantly increase my infiltration rate. I'm going to significantly increase my biology. I'm going to significantly increase my availability of nutrients because I'm keeping the soil cooler and the biology is cranking more. Everything works better when that soil is covered. So that's the first principle of soil health. It's also a great deterrent to growing weeds. As this picture shows, this is from our own farm here. Had a really good cover crop of rye in the background. Missed with the drill here, and you can see all of the weeds growing. And I promise you that this soil here, I took this picture in June, the bare soil where I had no living cover out there was probably 30 degrees hotter than it was back in this cover. And so there's just so many good benefits that happen when you keep the soil covered. Number two, we need to minimize the disturbance. And again, you probably have heard this, and oftentimes we think about this in terms of limiting tillage. You know, we need to be no-till. Well, that is part of it. Certainly minimizing physical disturbance. No good thing to the system comes from physical disturbance like tillage. Sometimes we need to do it. It's a tool. It can be used. I'm not saying you can never do it, but we need to minimize it. But also, we need to minimize the chemical disturbance and the biological disturbance. And those happens, when we're using herbicides and we're using pesticides. And again, I'm not here saying you can't or shouldn't ever use those. They're tools, just like tillage is. Tools are expensive. So if you're using tools when you don't need the tool, then you're just wasting your money and you're cutting into your profit margin. And that's why we're producing record amount of crops and we have record farm gross incomes, but our nets are shrinking all the time. And I don't know about you guys out there, but they're already talking for 2024. The cost of production of corn is less than what you could sell to 2024 new crop corn for. And so there's a lot of people pretty nervous about that. So we need to minimize these disturbances because they all cost money. I love this picture. This is a picture of a organic neighbor of ours. He uses cover crops, so he's got hairy vetch. He's rolling it down at the front of his tractor. He's planting his corn right behind it, and he's organic, so he didn't do any spraying on this. And this is what it looked like about 6 weeks later, 5-6 weeks later. He's got his corn coming up. You can't even hardly see where he planted through it. He got a perfect termination kill on his hairy vetch. He's got good weed control. He had 200 pounds of nitrogen in that hairy vetch, so he's got no disturbance mechanically. He's got no disturbance chemically or biologically, and this was irrigated, so he went on to grow 200-plus bushel irrigated corn. Now, does it work like this every year? No. He'll be the first to tell you that this was one of the best that he'd ever done. Other times, he didn't get a complete kill on his vetch, or he didn't get complete coverage, and he had weeds come through there, but this is the goal. This is the ultimate in minimizing disturbance, and it's going to be up to each individual producer how you're actually going to bring that to bear on your own soil. Number three, soil health principle number three, we need to maximize the amount of diversity that we have out there. Certainly, we want to maximize the biological diversity. Now, knowing all the valuable roles that biology plays, knowing that God created those biological organisms to do very specific and very important things within your soil system, whether it be, you know, breaking that nitrogen bond or making those minerals available or protecting the plant from diseases, the more diversity biologically we can have, the better off we're going to be. And you're not going to get that biological diversity if you don't have plant diversity. Because if all you ever grow is corn, or all you ever grow is soybeans, or all you ever grow is alfalfa or wheatgrass, if that's the only thing that's out there, you'll have a lot of biology that really thrives on those roots, and you won't hardly have any biology that thrives on other things. And that's why when you look at the way God created these plant ecosystems, you know, especially these perennial systems, you know, it's not a monoculture. It's, in fact, you know, it's not even just 12 or 14 things. You guys know, you know, there's 30, 40, 50, you know, up to over 100 different plant species in a really healthy native prairie type ecosystem. That's because that diversity is driving the diversity below the ground, and that's what really brings the resiliency to the system. So maximizing diversity is incredibly important. It's difficult to do in a cash cropping situation. It's easy to get the diversity, though, into these cover crops. And that's why we're such passionate advocates for diverse cover crop mixes. You're wasting such an incredible opportunity if you've got a window of time to plant a cover crop and all you want to do is sorghum sedan, or all you want to do is cereal rye. Now, there may be times and there may be reasons why that is the only thing you do. And like Jared said at the beginning, that's why we ask people what their goal is. So if your goal is just to absolutely produce the most tonnage of hay as possible and you don't care about anything else, well, then so maybe sorghum sedan by itself is the right choice for you. But if you're also interested in building organic matter and increasing your biological diversity and doing some of these other things, then we want to start adding some other things in there that can help build that system as well. So maximize diversity whenever you can. Number four, have living roots as often as possible in the soil. And again, if you're in a perennial system, then you are going to have living roots as often as possible. If you're not in a perennial system, then you have to get much more creative in how that happens. It might be interseeding. This cover crop here between these corn rows is interseeded when that corn was at the three leaf stage. It could be, you know, just getting something planted as soon as you get one crop harvested. You know, each person's going to have different ways of doing that, but you want to keep a living root out there as often as possible. Because again, that's what's feeding your biology. That's what's helping cover the soil. That's what's feeding the system. When you have a living root, you have a living plant, and that's what's capturing that solar energy. It just keeps the system alive more often. And I say as often as possible, because in some places you're going to be too cold for plants to grow all year long. Some places you're going to be too dry for plants to grow all year long. So it's as often as possible, as often as practical, and that's just going to vary from year to year. And then, of course, number five, integrate properly managed livestock. I always make sure I say properly managed and not just livestock, because we have definitely seen people who have not managed the livestock properly. You will run your soil into the ground. whether it's on a perennial system where you're overgrazing, or you can do the same thing on an annual system when you're overgrazing, you will send your soil backwards if you remove too much. If you leave the animals out there too long, you can just certainly hurt yourself. But when done properly, and when rotated properly, and the stocking rates and the timing and the intensity, when all that is done right, you will increase your soil health much more quickly than you would have without the animals. And so, again, it all goes back to the manager. My friend Steve Groff, who's in Pennsylvania, another cover crop guy, I love what I heard him say early on about cover crops. He said, cover crops will make a good farmer better and a bad farmer worse. And it's because you have to manage them properly. And it's, you know, I could say the same thing with cattle. You know, high stocking rates of cattle will make a good rancher better and a bad rancher worse. Because it's all about how do you integrate the management along with that practice as you're putting it in there. So the problem that we're trying to solve here at Green Cover, you know, that soil erosion problem, our soil carbon problem, our soil organic matter problem, we can solve that. We have seen people, we've done it on our own ground, we're helping others do it, we've seen it all across the country, all across the world. People are solving this problem. They're stopping erosion, they're rebuilding their organic matter, they're actually putting so much carbon back into the soil, again, over a period of time, that the NRCS has happened to come out and reclassify their soils. That's happened with Dave Brandt, it's happened with Jimmy Emmons, because their soils are so much different now than their neighbors that the NRCS says these are no longer the same. Even though before they started the regenerative path, they were exactly the same. So we can build our soils, we can change our soils. A lot of it is involving these six things right there. We have to capture that sunlight, we have to capture that carbon, we have to take advantage of that free nitrogen that God has given us. We have to utilize the minerals that are in our soils. We have to get as much biology driving the system as possible. And we have to take advantage of every drop of rainfall that the Lord sends us, because that's our responsibility to capture it when it comes. We do that. We integrate that by these five soil health principles, as we just talked about as well. So I'm going to end there. Here is my email address. Happy to follow up with people later. Email is probably the best way to get a conversation started. We can always jump on a call or a meeting later on. Also wanted to highlight, we have these soil health resource guides. We put one of these out every year. We're currently on the 9th edition. We're right now working on our 10th edition, which will be out in January. These have always been free. The last few issues have been 84 pages. There are lots of good pictures. And the articles in here are written by people that you would recognize, you know, the Ray Archuletas, the Gabe Browns, the Christine Joneses of the world. You know, our theory is if you can't be smart, at least be around smart people. So we know a lot of smart people, and we lean on them heavily to write articles for these resource guides. We give them all away for free. We'll print 30,000 of these. And we give them all away for free because we feel that education is the best and maybe the only way to really move the needle on getting people to become more regenerative. Because if you don't understand how these principles work, you are not going to try to implement them into your practice, because it goes against so much of what you've been taught, so much of how you were brought up. So you can go on our website. You can download these all for free. You can also request a copy of the current one. We'll send those out. When the 10th one hits the shelves, in January and February, if you come to one of the shows that we're at, you can pick up a free copy, or again, you can request that as well. So I think with that, Jared, I'm going to stop sharing and let's see what questions we have.
Awesome. Yeah. Huge virtual round of applause for Keith. You can tell this is not his first presentation. Like, he knows this stuff. And most importantly, you know, he practices what he preaches. So think about your questions here. Feel free to unmute or type them into the chat. But again, for those that are listening, it's greencoverseed.com/guide to get that. I'm sure there's probably a link on that homepage to be able to find the guide. And then keith@greencoverseed.com. So look him up and, check out the Smart Mix calculator. Well, maybe if you want to talk just a minute about that tool, because that tool is just, I mean, anybody who knows anything about cover crops has probably used that tool, sure. Even if they haven't bought the cover crops from you, because it's just, it is so incredible. Just give us a brief overview of what.
Yeah. So the Smart Mix calculator, it's an online tool that helps you determine, it's not going to tell you what mix is best for you, but it's going to help you build it yourself. And that's why we call it the Smart Mix, because we feel like the smartest mix is the one that you intelligently put together yourself. And so you get on there, and it's free. It's always been free. You sign up for an account. When you put in your zip code, the program knows your annual rainfall. It knows your temperatures, your frost dates, your growing degree days. We've got all that built into the system. And so then the first thing that you have to do to build a mix is you have to identify what your goals are. And then based on the goals, based on where you live, based on when you're going to plant it, and based on what the next crop is, it's going to go through our database of over 100 different cover crops. And it's going to say, okay, you know, Chris, for your situation, we think these are the best things that you could use for your mix. These would be pretty good. And these would be, you know, probably kind of marginal. And then these wouldn't be recommended at all. So again, you're still going to have to build the mix because, you know, as Dwayne Beck used to say, you know, I didn't pick your wife out for you. I can't necessarily build your cover crop mix without some good input. But you can definitely go through. And the nice thing is that as you build it, and there's, I'm simplifying it. There's a lot of, details in the background. It will tell you exactly what that mix is going to cost, which is important because you can have the best mix in the world, but if it's $70 an acre and your budget was 30, well, then that mix is not going to work for you. And you need to know that up front so that now you can go back and maybe adjust your goal, adjust your seeding rate, adjust something to make it fit into, you know, the budget of what you have. Like Todd said, you're like Jared said, you don't have to buy seed from us. It's free to use. You can set up an account. You can build mixes and never buy seed from us. That's okay. It's part of what we do to help bring value to the regenerative movement. So check it out. Just go to greencover.com and there's a tab on there called Smart Mix.
Yeah. It's pretty cool tool just to play around with, but especially if you're getting serious about, okay, this is what we need. If you're going to invest the money into a cover crop mix, I mean, it's a must have. So question, Tricia, we might need a little bit of context here if you want to unmute, but says she has a small backyard nursery business. What cover crops can I recommend for my customers for their small scale backyard gardens? And there's probably some clarifying questions we need there, but go ahead if you're able to unmute and maybe add a little more context to that, Tricia.
My goal is to help people grow their own food with eventually just without having to rely on commercial products. And, you know, that's it. So I'm wondering, cover crops are kind of new to me. So what is something I could recommend that people do to help themselves? Like a cover crop, because it sounds like that's like a major part of soil regenerative farming or even gardening.
Yeah, no, great question, Trish. You know, a garden is no different than a big field because you're still growing things. You're still trying to integrate the soil health principles. It's just at a different scale. And so I would probably have the same questions, you know, when are they planting it? Where are they located? What are their goals? You know, are they trying to produce nitrogen? Are they trying to control weeds? Are they trying to boost biology? You know, is it in the spring? Is it in the summer? Is it in the fall? We do have a number, but here's the thing, you know, if somebody's got a 500 square foot garden, we can't invest the same amount of time and resources into helping them develop a mix that we could for somebody that's got 500 acres. You know, it's just basic economics. So we have about 10 or 12 different pre-made mixes that are pretty diverse. They're for specific situations, scenarios, and those are available to be ordered, you know, by smaller, you know, you can order, you know, I think a pound or 5 pounds at a time of those. So that's where we would steer a lot of the gardeners to. And we are, in fact, we just had a meeting about this the other day. We really want to ramp up our section on our website to help gardeners make this, you know, help them go through a decision tree, because the Smart Mix calculator doesn't necessarily make sense for them. But we still will have a tool that will help walk them through, you know, what their goals are, when are they planting, and then which of these 12 pre-made mixes would be the best one to meet your goals. Again, it's a lot of it's going to be about diversity. We don't want to see you plant just legumes if your goal is to produce nitrogen, because while it would meet that goal, it's going to throw something else out of balance. And when you have too much nitrogen and not enough carbon in the system, then you start, you know, the biology will start eating and consuming the carbon in your soil. And that's a good way to get things out of balance, a good way to get weeds to grow, a good way to have bare soil. So again, it's a lot of it is about balance. There is a section on our website for, you know, smallholder, homesteader, gardener type people, and we are really working hard to build that out even more. So I suggest you check that out, and then shoot me an email. We'd be happy to work with you directly on developing some unique mixes for your situation if needed.
That would be wonderful, because there are so many people who want to do what they can where they are, you know, even apartment dwellers. And so that's wonderful. I love that that's on your website. So I definitely will reach out to you then. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great question. Appreciate that, Trish, because, you know, really there's more, isn't this statistic true? There's more lawns than there is row crops and farm ground. So if we're going to regenerate things, it needs to happen at a large scale and a small scale. So
yeah, for the lawn people, I tell them, well, the first thing is stop killing your clover. You know, that clover wanting to grow in your yard for a reason, stop killing it. That's, you know, that white clover is a great companion.
Yeah.
Is there a type of clover you would recommend for people to grow in their front yard?
Well, you know, in our area anyway, you know, Dutch white clover just wants to grow naturally because it's a low growing perennial. It's, you know, fairly persistent, but yet people don't like seeing it out there. You know, their picture of what the lawn should look like, you know, is kind of like the picture of a farmer who thinks, you know, a nice freshly tilled field looks good. Well, that doesn't look good to me anymore. And neither does a lawn that is just fescue or just bluegrass. You know, white clover is probably one of the best, but depending on your area, there would probably be other clovers. You need something that's not going to outgrow the grass so it can be mowed on the same schedule, but yet tolerate multiple mowings, or, depending on if you're mowing it or you're just, you know, letting it, you know, like a backyard type situation, something that's going to be drought tolerant. You know, if there's some areas that, aren't going to be mowed or maintained, then, you know, you can certainly look at some wildflower type things, you know, and for those, then you want to look at things that are very well, things that are native to your area, because those are going to survive the best.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Tricia, for the question. Clark asks, what annual crops would be best for finishing all natural grass-fed beef for fall and summer planting? So, and what, again, Clark, probably need a little context there if you're able to unmute, like, where are you from? Is it hot and dry? Is it wet? Do you get monsoon rains, or do you have irrigation?
Well, everything has changed the last couple of years. Seems like we're used to get a lot of rain and monsoons, but actually, I still got fence laying over from flooding that where it's never flooded before from 3 and 4 years ago. But the last couple of years, we're dry. And but typically, we get 30, 40 inches of rain. But we haven't seen it lately. But anyway, yeah, I live in southeast Kansas.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah. Very familiar with that area. We have a second location. How far are you from Iola?
That's where I get my seed.
Okay. So, you know, so in that part of the world, and again, we're familiar with that because we've got both employees and a lot of customers down there, you know, the backbone of any animal feeding operation is going to be grass. I mean, cows were just created to eat grass. And so you got to have a big grass component. Nothing is better than sorghum sedan. And there's lots of different traits, you know, BMR, photoperiod sensitive, rachitic dwarf. So you want to start with a base of a really good sorghum sedan. And again, this would be for summer grazing or for that early fall. Then we'd want to supplement that with a legume of some sort to produce the nitrogen for the soil, but protein for the animal. And so we would probably select a cowpea or a mung bean or a forage soybean, possibly sun hemp, depending on if you're planting the beginning of the summer or the end of the summer. And then the diversity that we want is not just diversity within a plant family, like all legumes are one plant family and all the grasses are one plant family, but we want multiple plant families out there for the benefit of both the soil, the biology, and the animal. So we're going to want to get some forbs out there, some other broadleaves. So it might be some sunflowers, it might be some buckwheat, it might be safflower. There's the number of different ones we can choose. And then we probably, even though if through the summer, the brassicas don't like heat real well, we would still probably throw in a little bit of a forage collard or a turnip or possibly a radish. Again, just diversifying the plant types, diversifying the root structures, while trying to always pick things that are going to be highly nutritious for grass fed, because if you're trying to grass finish something, that's a little different nutritional needs than just trying to maintain a cow calf pair. And right. So there's different things that you can do on timing or different things you can do with, you know, brown midrib sorghum versus a non-brown midrib and different things like that. And then if you're wanting to plant in the summer but graze in the wintertime, then again, then things shift. We would choose different sorghums. We really like sunflowers if you can get them to put a head on, because if they're eating sunflower heads, they'll gain really well eating that 40% oil seed out there in the wintertime. So there's different strategies that we would do based on when you're planting and when you want to graze it. And so I'm sure, have you worked with Zach down there in Iola?
Yes. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Zach has run his own cattle herd. So he knows that area and knows it really well. So he would, you're in good hands if he's helping design your mixes for you.
Okay, great. What do you think about hairy vetch? Is it, do animals like it much or?
Yes, hairy vetch is a great winter supplement. It's not going to be one that you'd necessarily plant in June because, you know, it's a winter annual. Right. So it won't handle the heat as well. But if you're planting in, you know, late July, August, September, down where you're at, I'd even plant hairy vetch right now. It's going to survive the winters just fine. And it's alfalfa quality forage in the spring. And nothing overwinters like hairy vetch does. So Gabe Brown has always said that the most profitable crop that he plants is triticale and hairy vetch, because he can hay it, he can graze it, or if he needs to, he can take it out for seed harvest, and then he uses that to replant. So hairy vetch is a big part of anything that you need to get to overwinter for that spring grazing.
And it's very palatable. The cattle like it.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you.
So maybe the final question here, and then we'll wrap things up. Keith, do you have anyone that's doing cover cropping in a perennial system or kind of the Colin Sice type method where they're planting cash crops into perennials?
Yes. There's people, you know, in different areas that are doing that. You know, and there's two strategies. If you have primarily cool season perennials, then you need to, then your window of opportunity is in the hot part of the year. And so that's the summertime. And, you know, so like Chris or for Clark down in Southeast Kansas, we've seen this work really well. You know, if you've got a fescue, orchard grass, brome type pasture, those things are very unproductive during the summer, because those things don't like the heat. They kind of go into a dormant stage and they're just going to sit there. Well, in the years where he's getting 35 or 40 inches of rain, like the typically they do, but yeah, they've been in a drought cycle. You know, we could plant sorghum and cowpeas and sun hemp and sunflowers. And in 60 days, you know, we might grow 3 tons of forage. Well, that's the window that they need to hit down there, because that's when the perennials are largely gone dormant. If you have predominantly warm season things, you know, your blue stems and Indian grass and switchgrass and things like that. Well, then now your opportunity is on the cool season side of things. And so we see this a lot down south where they're growing a lot of Bermuda and Bahia type grass. All that stuff, you know, is productive in the hot part of the year, goes dormant and does nothing through the winter. So then they can plant, you know, ryegrass and winter peas and hairy vetch and, you know, triticale and things like that, and grow a pretty good crop on the backside of where their perennial grows. So that's what you really have to do. You will not get an annual to do hardly anything if it's competing with an actively growing perennial. That just is not going to work. So you have to catch the perennial when it's in its off season, and you also need to do whatever you can to give the annual a chance to establish. And so in the case of the, you know, orchard grass or a fescue pasture, if you want to go out there mid-June and plant your warm season thing, I would go out there and graze that cool season pasture pretty hard, remove as much of that as possible, set that cool season thing back a little bit, open up the canopy so the warm season thing planting can get as much sunlight as possible, and then pray for rain. Pray for rain, because if you get the rain, that'll work pretty well. You don't get the rain, you know, it's not going to work, because the moisture has been largely used up by growing the perennial, the cool season perennial to that point.
Yeah, good answer. I appreciate that. That's
now, if you want to interseed some additional perennials into an existing perennial, so like you've got, you know, a cool season pasture and you want to try to get some clovers or chicory or plantain or something like that established, that's a little bit different. A little bit different animal, because now it's a perennial against a perennial. They're both, you know, there it's, you kind of want them to be relatively the same season. There you just have to kind of pick your time, where you think you could establish the new perennials without the existing ones just swallowing it up. It's not easy to do. And there's been a lot of seed that has been put out there that has not worked, simply because the competitiveness of a perennial is, you know, they're perennial for a reason. They've got deep root systems, and when there's a scarce resource, he who has the deepest roots will always win.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you for that. We appreciate those who've been on here tonight, those who've participated, those that are listening to the replay, whatever method that is. Encourage you to stay tuned in, both with what we're doing, with what Keith's doing with Green Cover. He has multiple speaking engagements, so if you ever get a chance to go see and meet him, shake his hand, I encourage you to do that. Ask your questions one-on-one. And so just kind of to wrap things up here, I was thinking about, you know, we've been going here at Ag Steward actively for about 10 months. We kicked off in January with a summit, and kind of wanted, for those who are new, to give some context, some backstory to why we do what we do. And to explain that, it probably started with me realizing that there were a lot of things that I didn't know. So when I took over management of the ranch, I had a two-year-old boy. My mom and dad had left to serve missions in a foreign country. It was before cell phones were available, and so they were out of communication, and I was just 23 years old. And took over several hundred thousand acre ranch, herd of cattle. And we thought we knew, my wife and I thought we knew what we were doing. We quickly found out that, man, there's a lot of things that we didn't know. You know, we didn't know about the economic side of it. We knew a little bit about the ecology side. We knew quite a bit about the livestock production, but those short falls in our knowledge quickly caught up with us, and we began to realize, holy cow, we're going to go broke, we're going to burn out, or pretty quickly we're not going to have the help that we need because we don't have our stuff figured out. And so along the way, I've learned some things. I've been blessed to go to the Ranching for Profit School, to be able to work with the Savory Institute, to meet and go to soil health classes and meet great individuals like the one that we've had speak to us here today. And so my inspiration for starting Ag Steward is to be able to take that person who I was wherever it was and say, okay, here's a system to bridge that gap from maybe the things that you don't even know that you don't know, and help you to learn those and expedite that learning. So with that, we're kind of doing a little bit of rebranding. We're reaching out. You might see the look of our emails has changed a little bit, because I'm realizing that there's a lot that, while I understand, marketing is not one of them. So we're working with a marketing agency to help us to increase our reach, to better live and fulfill the mission that we have at Ag Steward, which is to help family-owned farms and ranches be highly profitable, regenerate the land that they steward, and pass on a viable business to the next generation so that they can leave a lasting legacy. That's not a canned mission statement. I mean, that's the thing that is ingrained in me of why I want to do this. And we're building a team around us to be able to support us in that cause, because I'm not the smartest guy in the room. When it comes to soil health, I'll refer you to Keith or to William DeMille, who works with us. Somebody who has the knowledge in that area. When it comes to economics, we'll work with somebody else who has the knowledge in that area. I feel like my gifts and talents lie more on a holistic view of being able to see what is missing and who might be missing, and to be able to bridge that gap, especially when it comes to the people side of it. And so those are kind of the components that we look at: the financial, the ecology, and the people. We get those things, and those are the stable foundation for a business. And then we overlay that with a solid mission and vision and values, and we scale it, and we romance the next generation into the agriculture, and we leave a lasting legacy. So I'm going to put in the chat here. It's not an easy URL to remember. But that's, if you want to learn more about what we do at Ag Steward, what it looks like to work with us, just click on the link in the chat. For those that are listening, jared@agsteward.fyi is probably the best way to reach out to us. And we'll just talk about what your needs are, and if it's a good fit to work together. If we can help you reach your goals faster, be more profitable in the process, then we'd love to work with you. So with that, we again thank you everyone for joining us here today. Thank you, Keith, for being part of this movement. And we'll go ahead and stop the recording and hope you can join us next time. We've got a couple really great speakers lined up, including, I think, in November, Fred Provenza. So a great one that you'd want to plug into. He is just a genius. And yes, definitely a round of applause. Thank you, Keith.
Thanks for joining us on the Profitable Steward Podcast. Want to learn more about making your enterprise more profitable? Check out Ag Steward on our website, www.agsteward.fyi. Here at Ag Steward, we're working hard to make sure you have the latest tools and knowledge from the field of regenerative agriculture. Subscribe to our podcast to keep up with the latest info, and help us spread the word by giving this video a thumbs up, sharing this information with other farmers, and, as always, please join the conversation by leaving us a rating and a review so we can help you to keep growing strong.